This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the LabCast. This is your host, Jonathan Crow. This week, we're really excited to have Rick Burns here. Rick is the product marketing director at HubSpot, which is, of course, our neighbor across the river here in Boston. Really excited to have Rick here. He's been at HubSpot since way back in the early days, 2008. He's been in a few different roles, seen a lot of things happen there, seen a lot of great growth that the company has had. And I'm looking forward personally to this call because way back last September, I was at HubSpot's annual inbound conference here in Boston, saw one of Rick's presentations, was really impressed with what I heard. He had a lot of good stuff to say about aligning your marketing and your sales teams. And so I've been looking forward to connecting with him. Now, finally got a chance. Rick, really great to have you here.
It's awesome to be here. I'm a big fan of yours and everything you guys do over there, and I'm psyched to be here.
Well, thanks very much. Likewise, absolutely. Interestingly enough, we're just making the switch over to HubSpot, so we're definitely fans and looking forward to getting started with it. So the first topic I wanted to cover is around sales enablement, really kind of aligning your teams in terms of product, people, marketing, and the sales team. And there's one big thing that you guys did that I think would be shocking for a lot of companies. You guys threw out demo decks. Can you talk a little bit about your reasoning behind that?
Yeah, so we just felt that focusing on the web and using the web to tell the story of the product was just much, much more efficient. If you look at the way sales teams use demo decks traditionally, the marketing team will create a demo deck and then it'll hand it off to the sales team, and you'll end up with all of these different forks. And in each fork, each different version of the demo deck, it's just the quality goes down, the story takes another twist and turn. And if you're a company trying to tell a story that really resonates, that's really consistent, you want that story to be consistent the way you can do it on the web.
Right.
The other thing I'd say with it is that the website is just a much better medium and media type for storytelling. You can do a lot of cool stuff on the web. You can collect data, and it's just a much more robust platform.
That's a really good point. I mean, there's things that you can point out that maybe are a little bit more easy to digest when the buyer has their own time. They can kind of visit it as they will. I mean, a lot of times during demo decks and during calls, sometimes you can kind of sense people getting itchy or not quite paying attention. So it's great to be able to kind of corral that.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And so what are some of the benefits that you've seen after doing that? Actually, when did you put that into place? How long has it been?
Well, we really began focusing on that. And I would say it hasn't been like on and off. It's something that we're trying to phase out.
I see.
But we began pushing that in that direction like a year and a half ago, and we've been really we've been doing it ever since. I think one of the things that we've seen is that our prospects come much better prepared to those sales calls. And as a result, the sales conversation is much more focused on the strategy and solving problems, as opposed to just like a show and tell of features. And I think it just makes a much more productive conversation that's more useful for the prospect.
Right. And so a lot of the focus could be about not just, here's some bells and whistles, or here's some technical how to do things. Although that is important, you can also get into some of the bigger issues that are going to help people be more successful out of the gate, which is huge for SaaS.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that sort of aligns with the entire inbound marketing, inbound sales philosophy. That's kind of the core of what we do. I mean, we feel like at the very root of all of this, the buyer's in control. And as a marketer, at the top of the funnel, at the marketer at the middle of the funnel, the bottom of the funnel, like I am in product marketing and sales enablement, you have to give the prospect and the customer ultimately really useful people help information that they can use on their own time. That's what we've done by focusing on the web instead of demo decks. The web really gives the customer control to consume information on their own time and the information they want, as opposed to the demo decks, which are really sales controlling the information.
And you guys have been such good leaders when it comes to that initiative and really leading by example, doing really, really terrific stuff. And so, this does raise a little bit of a tension point. There's always that tension point between marketing and sales anyway. And so when you go to sales and you're saying, no more Demodex, here's what we're doing now, do you get pushback or how does that work?
Yeah, I think that the biggest challenge, it isn't like direct pushback. It's just that it's hard to implement categorically, and that's sort of why I say that it's a phase thing.
Right. I
think the most important thing is to have alignment across the sales team on the methodology that the sales team is going to be using and the approach to selling. And where you don't have that alignment, you're not going to be able to use the website if that's what you're trying to push through. It really depends on a sales management team and a sales marketing or a marketing team being pretty aligned in the approach to selling.
That's great, and so that's a great segue into another key point. You're saying to the sales team, we're really trying to shape the website to answer a lot of the questions that you're going to get. So it's really helping you. So is the sales team really kind of involved with that process then? Are they kind of giving you recommendations when it comes to content? And how are you dealing with that so you're not dealing with, tons of recommendations, tons of requests, and kind of really streamlining things?
Yeah, no, it's an awesome question. I mean, I think that one of the things we try to do really hard, we really, really focus on, and I talk to my team about a lot, is setting up these flows of information into the team so that we can use that information, what the sales reps are hearing on the calls, to improve the content. And we do that in a lot of different ways. One basic level is seating. So all of the sales enablement team, we sit right in the middle of the sales floor. That's obvious, but it's just one way we collect information. Another is a ideas board that we have set up so all the reps can vote on ideas for the sales team. We use a wiki and we put all of our collateral and links onto the wiki, and that allows reps to comment on what they like, what they don't like, what they've seen and we should add. In the sum of that, it really ends up being a pretty good information flow. I think one of the things that's worked particularly well also with the web pages in particular is just having our web development team and the people building the websites walk around on the sales floor and show mock-ups to the sales reps and saying, what do you think of this? Is this how you tell the story? It's a very simple thing, but it has a huge impact, and it just facilitates that information flow, which just improves the story, makes the story more consistent and resonant, I think.
Right, absolutely. And so one big question that I think is great for you and your company and other companies that are like HubSpot, I mean, you guys have experienced massive growth. So this is a completely different story for companies that are really well established or just getting started. I mean, you guys have really experienced huge growth, and with that comes a lot of opportunities, a lot of growing pains too. What are some of the steps that you have taken around these processes to really ensure that they're scalable or that they work as you guys are growing so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's why we've focused on web first in the sales enablement world.
Right.
I'd much, much rather create a piece of content that will end up in anybody in the world's hand on a website rather than a deck that lives behind lock and key in Box somewhere, box.com somewhere. So that's the scalability issue is probably the biggest reason why we began with the web. The other thing, and it's a similar point, but we really base all of our sales enablement on information on the wiki, and we've put enormous focus on developing out the wiki and really critically the comments around the wiki, because that's a way of collecting feedback on all of this, and the feedback is really important to make it useful, because I think one of the biggest risks that a marketing team or a sales enablement team runs when they're working with sales is to do a ton of work and have none of it be used by the sales team.
Right.
You're just irrelevant then, and you're not having an impact on the business. And you got to make sure that what you do and what you spend all your time on is useful. That's hard.
And that, absolutely. I mean, and that goes the same for really anything when it comes to work at a tech company. I mean, with the product itself, any kind of content that you produce, making sure that before you invest a ton of time into it that you know there's going to be some kind of payoff, right?
You're exactly right. I think your point about the product too is exactly right. It's like creating content that sales team uses is exactly the same thing as building a product that nobody wants to use. It's sort of about listening to your customer, and in the case of sales enablement, your customer sales.
Right, and so you've spoken a little bit about some of the things you've done at HubSpot to make sure that everyone's on the same page, telling the same stories. You know, even when it comes to your CDN assignments in the office and creating these opportunities for people to give feedback and to share and to collaborate and get aligned. What are some other examples of generating this opportunity? I guess one question specifically I had in mind was, how often do you go back? You take a look at some of the institutional knowledge that you have around buyer personas and buyer journeys. How often do you say, you know, we need to revisit this?
On the buyer's journey and the buyer personas, I would say that the buyer's journey, we're probably revisiting it once a year. Mm-hmm. In terms of the buyer persona, it's something we're really constantly updating. We're really always talking about sub-personas or doing interviews, and it's sort of this constant process of iterating on your understanding of the customer. To a certain extent, it's not a updated on any type of period. It's just always be listening to the customer kind of thing.
Absolutely. And so do you have any suggestions for teams that want to kind of establish that type of feedback loop? What's a good way to do it?
So a couple things. First of all, I would make sure that you start off with a very formal documentation of what the buyer persona is and the buyer journey. So,
right.
You know, invest some time in a formal documentation of both the persona, which is the person that you're selling to, and, you know, every last characteristic of that typical person. And then similarly, document in a very formal way the process of that person coming to become a customer, and I do that in a way, ideally a wiki or some sort of public document or some sort of document that's shared within the company. And then one thing that we do that I think works pretty well is we do a lot of interviews. So on the product marketing team, I do a lot of win-loss interviews. I'll talk to CMOs, VPs of marketing who have either bought HubSpot or not bought HubSpot for some reason. I write up all those notes and put them on a wiki page that I then append to the buyer's journey and buyer persona core articles on the wiki. And so in that way, it becomes like this constant process of updating.
Right.
Another thing that we do a lot of is user testing, and that just adds another angle. Watching people use our website, watching people use our software, it's another piece of data that we have about our core persona, their journey to becoming a HubSpot customer, and that adds to the body of content. So we're constantly building up in a lot of different ways this body of content about who buys HubSpot.
Yeah, and it's such an important thing to do, and it's funny. I mean, it's something I think a lot of companies know they should be doing, and then you turn and you look and say, well, you know, where is the documentation? It's just living in people's heads. I mean, they think they know where their buyers are, but taking that time to document, I mean, it does take some time, but it absolutely becomes worth it, and I think it's the only way you can really get to a point where you can scale with it.
Yeah, I mean, nobody has enough time for anything, but
I
think this is one of those things that really simplifies and helps you focus. You know, if you're not doing this, you're kind of taking the shotgun approach. You know, we're just going to throw a lot of stuff against the wall and see what works. And if you focus on the persona and really spell out that persona and their journey to becoming a customer, you can then just look back at that journey and say, okay, this is where things are breaking down.
Right.
They're not making it past maybe they're not finding us. So we need to do a lot of top of the funnel work. Maybe they're finding us, but they don't trust us. So we need to do a lot of brand building, make ourselves more of a safe choice. It really helps you assess where the problem is and then zero in on that. And therefore, it's going to end up saving you time in the long run, I think.
Absolutely. And that actually answers my next question, which was going to be, how do you prioritize your content creation? And I think you just answered that to a good extent right there. But taking that further, beyond, we're looking at the specific points along our buyer's journey, things are breaking down. This is an excellent opportunity for us to publish some content that's going to help, nudge them along or help them convert. But do you also have any processes that are established to help you prioritize for, best types of customers or any other ways to help you focus on the best opportunities?
I think that then becomes more of a strategic decision that the business needs to make.
Right.
It's a really interesting question. It's related to something that there's actually a HBS case study done about HubSpot on, because early in HubSpot's life, I think after maybe our B round, right after I joined HubSpot in 2008, we had a real question of, do we focus on what we called Ollie, our small business persona, or do we focus more on Mary, which is our medium-sized business, mid-market persona? And, we avoided that decision for a long time. Everybody always likes to keep their options open for as long as possible. But I think it's a core question, and the prioritization by segment of business is really a decision you have to make at the top levels of the company, and you have to focus, be very, very deliberate about which personas you're going to be focusing on so that the whole company can be aligned. And I'd also add that doesn't necessarily mean that the answer will be simple, because there can be complicated answers. I mean, I'd say, like, right now at HubSpot, we're very focused on a mid-market, what we call Mary persona, but there are a lot of other personas that get a lot of value out of HubSpot, and that HubSpot is very useful. They can be very successful customers. So while our product and engineering team may be focused on one single persona, we have a lot of people selling to different personas because they can benefit from what was actually built for that original persona.
Right. And so kind of going back a little bit, one thing before we go, I know we're kind of running out of time here, but I wanted to ask you two more things. And it's going back to working with the sales team. And there was two things that jumped out at me back in your presentation in September. And the first one was a recommendation that bringing in new people, one way to really get them on board was to get them to write case studies. And I was hoping you could talk about that a little bit. I thought that was a really interesting point.
Yeah, we do that because it's a fantastic way to have new marketers get to know the product, get to know customers, and get to know what the customers like about the product. You can use HubSpot, you can read case studies, but to really market the product, to really understand what's special about HubSpot, you've got to talk to customers. And
right.
It's just really, really important for marketers to do that, because marketers aren't necessarily in a customer-facing role. Most marketers aren't. And so in a services role, a sales role, you're going to be getting that pretty regularly. But in a marketing role, you're not. And it's really important to get that input. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier about those information flows. I think a lot about, how do you set up the information flows for the team so that everybody can really get the perspective they need to do their job well.
Right. And so, that's a great way to, I'm sorry, I said sales before, but you're right, bringing in marketers. And I think it is a good point. They can sometimes operate in almost a silo. So I think it's a great way to kind of bust that out and give them a good introduction. And then one other thing that jumped out was you mentioned one good thing to try that you guys have had success with is getting top sales reps to actually serve as testers for new features. So again, this is kind of like another cool way to establish different types of feedback loops to really give you more insight and get you more aligned.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I think of it kind of like, you know, as a marketing activity more than anything else. When you have a new product, you want to market it internally, really. And if you think about something that's done frequently in product launches, you know, even in the consumer space as well as B2B, it's just you want to get it in the hands of people that people look up to. It's like, you know, Ashton Kutcher on Twitter. It's like Squarespace, getting all, you know, all sorts of fancy companies using their software. It's having influencers use your product.
Right.
And it's the same thing in sales, because if the influencers on a sales team are the people who are doing really, really well. And if they're selling that cool new product, then everybody else is going to be like, oh, wow, I want to do what they're doing. And so as a product marketing team trying to roll out a new product, trying to get the sales team selling a new product, you want to start with the influencers.
Right. It's such a cool way to think about it. I thought that was a really effective idea. Well, Rick, I think that's about all the time we have. So I wanted to thank you again for taking time out of your day to do this. Really enjoyed it and hope we get to connect again in the near future.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks again.